just is opening the show with a slow jam tonight. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. Good morning, Roger Bettish.
And good morning to you, or should I say, good morning
good
to
morning,
you, a little
everybody.
Slow jam.
720 yeah. WGN.
How are you, buddy?
Good, how are you?
I'm excellent.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
This has been a long week, Roger.
Uh-oh. Have you been traveling?
No, just the world. Just the world.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I gotcha. Yes, it has. I was talking to one of the building employees as I was coming in, and he says, how's the news? And I go, I try to stay away from it all week long.
Yeah, no kidding.
Honest to goodness. Because there is so much. I've been doing news reporting now since 66. I cannot remember a point in time when there has been so much big news happening,
yeah,
as opposed to one big event with little news happening. There are big news events happening at the same time. So many so that it makes some people's heads hurt.
I'm going to be honest. I tuned away from a lot of it this week. I should have watched more of the town halls and things like that, but I just found them tough to watch after a while because we were so inundated, and we talked about it last week quite a bit and
right,
the Second Amendment and everything with that. And then I was watching that town hall with
CNN one.
Dana Loesch.
Yeah.
And the stuff she was saying, and then to see her tell the media that they love the mass shootings.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, man. Jess and I were talking about what to do on the show this week. I'm like, you know, let's just, maybe we'll just get away from reality for a little bit. Let's talk about other things.
Yeah.
I mean, we got comfort dogs biting children on airplanes.
How
we got, you know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket this week. That's what United gets for not allowing that peacock on board a couple weeks ago.
There you go. Doggone them.
We need support peacocks. No more support dogs.
Yeah.
Support peacocks don't bite. They might peck an eye out here and there. But they're not going to bite anybody. Sometimes you got to look at the small victims.
But you got to give them two seats, especially when they spread the feathers.
Well, that was the problem. The support peacock needed its own seat. You couldn't just lay them on the seat, you know, underneath the seat in front of you.
Well, then they have to, you know what they need to do? They need to do what they did with Morris the cat.
What did they do with Morris the cat?
They bought him his own first-class seat.
Well, Morris was racking in the dough back.
Well, yeah. But his handler would get a first-class seat. Morris would get one right next to him. And they paid for it. Doggone it.
They didn't have an official airline of Morris the cat? That's
no,
they
no.
They worked out some deal.
No, they should have.
Yeah.
If they had known then what we know now.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Morris the cat, was that the Meow Mix cat? Meow, 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 meow.
No, that
meow,
was Nine meow, Lives.
Meow. Morris was Nine Lives?
Nine Lives, yeah. And Morris was actually, if I remember my facts correctly, it's been a while, Morris was female.
Well, there were more than there were
way
several
more
Morrises.
Yeah,
right?
And they got them. They were usually strays.
Do we think there isn't a Morris the cat anymore? Did they just drop that?
I have not seen the ads with Morris the cat in a long time.
That was from Yomix, you said?
No. Nine Lives.
Nine Lives.
Yeah.
Nine Lives still exists, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. Sure.
You know, I work with Steve Dale, and I syndicate his national radio show. So we work with a bunch of different pet sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one that was in town a couple of weeks ago for some meetings with us. And they've got a new product that's going to be on 9,000 Walmart stores and things like that. And so they said it's also at Woodman's and it's at Jewel. And I said, and they were going to go look at a Jewel because she was wondering, you know, this company's based out in Utah, and she was wondering how they're being, you know, merchandised out here. And I said, well, when I get into the stores, I'll take a look and I'll send you some pictures. And so I was in our Woodman's. Have you ever shopped at a Woodman's?
No, never been in one.
So there's like 36 or 38 of them. And I think they're more further out. I don't know. There's one in Carpentersville right by our house. And it's a huge store. And it's sort of like a mom and pop Costco in a weird way, in that like I think you can't use credit cards. I think you've got to use your debit card.
Oh, okay.
And everything's a little bit cheaper than at the Jewel. The dog treats were a dollar cheaper a bag. Usually we'll buy water there. Usually soda's on a better deal. Things like that. But so I was there, and at the Woodman's out by us, they have. It's a big store. It's much bigger than like our Jewel. It's probably twice the size as our Jewel,
wow,
at least. But they have two full aisles of dog and cat stuff.
That's like a lot,
like
more
both
than
sides. Oh my gosh, it's insanity how much they have.
Mm.
It's crazy.
I wouldn't mind it. Usually, I hate to say it, even though I patronize Juul, I got to say that there are a lot of things that I think they should carry him, but then there are a lot of things I think they don't need.
You know what's interesting, Roger? We work with all these companies in the pet space, and I never knew until this how hard it is to get your products on store shelves.
Yeah. It costs big bucks.
There are way more products than there is shelf space available.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some stores will take one thing but not another. And like, you have to, you know, work out deals. And I know that from all these companies we've worked with, Walmart is like the king that you've got to get into because they're everywhere.
Right.
But also they're very persnickety about what they will and what they won't put. And kind of same thing with PetSmart and Petco. We have another company that's getting this product in PetSmarts this summer, and they're very excited about that and a huge launch that they're going to push in for that.
Yeah.
It's much more complicated than I ever would have thought. Oh, I've got a product. Well, we'll sell it there. Well, that's not that easy. They've got to want to take it. And where are they going to put it? And how's it going to be, you know, put out there? And what are you going to do with it? And things like that.
And people should realize that whenever you're in a grocery store, and if you're like me, I go 98% of the time I go to the same store. So I know where everything's at.
Yeah.
And that's how I, like, get in and get out real fast because I've got it all planned out. Once in a while, you'll walk in and everything's been moved around.
Yes, drives you nuts.
And I know, well, but they do that again because of how much people are paying to put stuff on the shelves and where the heavier traffic will be and which products are going to get more exposure.
That's why the milk refrigerators are all the way in the back, right?
You got to walk through all the other aisles. And what aisle do you have to walk through? The candy and snack and cereal aisles to get there. So it's things move around, and then not just shelf space, but which shelf will you be on? Will you be at the one? Are you paying enough to be at the one that people can just reach eye level, or do you have to bend down, or do you have to reach up to get it? Those aren't paying as much. You're stuck in the back.
That's interesting.
You know, it's we dealt with when I was working for Edelman Public Relations. We dealt with a lot of food. Products and companies, and I learned a lot from that. So, oh my goodness, there's still some cake left. We'll have to bring some down to you.
Why was there cake?
Bridget didn't want to eat all the cake that I bought for our anniversary because we're all on diets. We had one.
Happy anniversary!
Oh, thanks.
What number?
42.
Holy cow! It's a big number.
That was on the 21st. That was a couple of days ago. So we went out for
42nd on the 21st. That's like a weird golden birthday anniversary.
Oh my gosh. That is weird. I just thank you for
doubled
like freaking
up the
me
date.
Out. Yeah. So we had a nice I bought her a nice imported Irish China cake tray, and you have to put cakes on the cake tray. So I ran out early that morning to Lutz Bakery off of Western Avenue.
So you got married in 1976?
Yep. You just did the math on that?
I did. 1976.
What were you doing in 1976?
I was 5 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
I was doing nothing.
Yikes.
1976, Roger.
Yeah. And our daughter was born 2 years later.
Man.
She'll be 40 this year. Yikes.
It's sucks to be old enough that I can say, like, wow, think about that, 1976.
I
was alive.
Yeah.
And I was doing things. But that just, you know, the 80s never seemed long ago to me. The 80s, it was the 80s. That was when I grew up. It wasn't that long ago, but now it's really a long time ago.
Yeah, it is a long time ago now. I barely remember the 80s. I was so busy.
I love the 80s.
Yeah.
That was my decade.
That's right. You
it really was.
That'll
always be my decade because I turned 9 in 80 and I turned 19 at the end of the 80s. So really, if you think about 9 to 19, that's kind of, you know, it's really a time of life for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my decades were, I'd say about 1960. Well, from, I would say all of the 60s. I was trying to give it a different year, but I keep thinking back to Kennedy. So all of the 60s and about half of the 70s, probably up till when I got married, were the decades that I really remember and really...
What year were you born, Roger?
52.
52, okay. Yeah. And I'm sure we've talked about this before, but you've watched Mad Men, right?
No, we have not. Bridget wants to see it.
Got to watch Mad Men.
I know.
Because here's the thing with Mad Men, because I've got a buddy who we always talk about what shows we're watching and recommend to each other, and mm-hmm. he quit on Mad Men.
Why?
Because he felt, he's like, I don't like any of these people. There's nobody to like root for and hope mm-hmm. that they do well or whatever. It's, you know, kind of a bunch of vile people. And for the most part, he's really right about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a fascinating snapshot of a time in our culture, in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the costuming and everything else, to see everybody smoking all mm-hmm. the time, everywhere, while they're pregnant. You know, kids walking around with dry cleaning bags over their heads,
mm-hmm.
never seatbelted in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything that has changed.
Right.
Is pretty fascinating. And it's so well written. It's really
interesting. I actually used a scene from one of the episodes in my advertising class mm-hmm. that I showed the students. It was the one where they had the cigarette account. And they were all sitting around the table,
mm-hmm.
and the head of the ad agency wanted to know what the main character's idea was. And I forgot the line, but he got the line. He had no plan. He went into a meeting with no plan.
Right. This is the very first episode, I think. Was that the first one that it's from? Yep.
I just caught the bit on YouTube. I was redoing my curriculum. And I saw it on YouTube, and I said, oh, my God, this is perfect. This is, you know, how you sell cigarettes. Oh, my gosh. Of all the things you can sell, this is how you do it. And I use it as an example of how you go after people's minds.
And do you remember what was said in the scene? Because he was blanking out. Somebody else pitched something, and then he came up with something.
Well,
before they
the
left.
Go-getter guy came in and did research, and he's got research this and everything. And the other guy says, no, it's you don't taste the whatever the chemical
it was,
you don't taste it.
Well, it was that so what happens is the show's beginning, they can't use any medical stuff,
right?
Like Reader's Digest has just been writing that cigarettes are bad for you,
mm-hmm.
and they previously had been refuting that by saying doctors smoke Lucky Strikes or different things like that.
Yeah.
And now the FCC or the FDA or whoever has ruled that they cannot use any medical claims at all or something like that in their cigarette advertising.
Yeah, I got it right here.
So now they don't know what in the world to say.
Yeah. You want to play it? Here's the 4-minute version.
I don't know what we have to do to make these government interlopers happy. They tell us to make a safer cigarette.
I hope they don't swear.
And then suddenly... That's not good enough.
Might as well be living in Russia.
Mm. Damn straight.
Because they're all smoking.
And they're all smoking. Yeah, right.
I might have a solution.
Now, here's the go-getter guy.
At Sterling Cooper, we've been pioneering the burgeoning field of research. And our analysis shows that the health risks associated with your product is not the end of the world. People get in their cars every day to go to work. And some of them die. Cars... are dangerous. There's nothing you can do about it. You still have to get where you're going. Cigarettes are exactly the same. So why don't we simply say, so what if cigarettes are dangerous? You're a man. The world is dangerous. Smoke your cigarette. You still have to get where you're going.
That's very interesting. I mean, if cigarettes were dangerous, it would be interesting.
Shit, they are.
Well, that's... I don't want to play... Because I can't remember if they swear
on... No, they don't swear. Not on it was on AMC. It was on, like, basic, you know, more or less a broadcast channel. Yeah. They don't swear.
Society
ever.
Has a death wish. And if we could just...
So the main character now, who has no clue, is...
What the hell are you talking
about? So Don Draper.
Yeah, Don Draper, right.
I'm not selling rifles here. I'm in the tobacco business.
I'm not selling rifles.
Dylan, before you leave, can I just say something?
I don't know, Don. Can you?
It's his boss, because he sat there blank-faced the whole time.
Right.
The Federal Trade Commission and Reader's Digest have done you a favor. They've let you know that any ad that brings up the concept of cigarettes and health together, well, it's just going to make people think of cancer.
Yes, and we are grateful to them.
But what Lee Jr. said is right. If you can't make those health claims, neither can your competitors.
So, we got a lot of people not saying anything that sells cigarettes.
Not exactly. This is the greatest advertising opportunity since the invention of cereal. We have six identical companies making six identical products. We can say anything we want. How do you make your cigarettes? I don't know.
That's the sun.
We breed insect repellent tobacco seeds, plant them in the North Carolina sunshine, grow it, cut it, cure it, toast it.
What? There you go. There you go.
He's writing on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before whiteboards.
But everybody else's tobacco is toasted. No, everybody else's tobacco is poisonous. Lucky Strikes is toasted.
Well, gentlemen, I don't think I have to tell you what you just witnessed here.
So for whatever reason, that struck a nerve and it seemed like brilliance.
Yeah.
I didn't quite, as I'm watching, I'm like, I still don't quite get what we just did there. Why right. is this so brilliant? But basically saying, here's what we're going to sell.
Yeah.
Just some nebulous part about them. They're
right.
toasted.
Yeah, that's what advertising does.
I guess.
And that's why we, the public, are sucked into so much advertising. It's not that research is done. It's key facts, key words, key images. You instill in the human mind a feeling of positiveness, of good feeling. Another movie. What's the Tom Hanks Gleason movie where he's
Jackie Gleason.
Hanks is a advertising executive in Chicago, and they preview an ad, a TV ad, for an airline, and trying to set it apart from all the other airlines. And it takes you home, and it gives a feeling of home. And there's an older woman with a shawl, and the grandkid has just flown in. And, hi, Grandma. And it's just this feeling that these ads give you. That's everyone does the same thing. What does an airplane do?
Crash. Well, I thought that's what you're going
no.
for.
What does an airplane
trying
do?
To avoid the negativity.
Right. Well, so no. Or the sameness. Positive. Or the sameness. How do you, as he said, in a field of hundreds of cigarettes,
yeah.
how do you set yourself apart? They're all the same. How do you get people to reach for yours as opposed to someone else's?
Yeah.
It's toasted. It's fresher. It is airier. It doesn't leave a taste in your mouth. Whatever, because you can't make any medical claims. And the same with the airlines. The same with what are cereals? They're all made with oats, and they all have sugar.
But not all of them have the marshmallows.
And that's a marketing technique. Why do you think the marshmallows are in there?
Because they're delicious. They are. Have you had them
yes.
all Lucky Charms lately?
Yes, they are delicious. And they're magically delicious.
Well, there's that.
But the reason, someone's sitting around saying, oh, man, we gotta have another cereal. But, yeah, but that, you know, we just did those fruity things the other, yeah, but, wow. Why don't we use these little marshmallows? Oh, yeah, we can use the marshmallows. And you know what? We'll give them different shapes. Oh, wow, they'll be magic. Let's say a leprechaun made them. This is the thinking that goes on in these development meetings.
So here's the interesting thing. We got to take a quick break into the news. But when we come back, I'm going to play the audio of a new Diet Coke commercial. That
right.
and it's funny that you bring up the Mad Men thing because I was thinking of it this week.
Mm-hmm.
Just this week because there's a new Diet Coke commercial, a new campaign that reminded me exactly of what they sort of went through, I think, with this Lucky Strikes ad.
Okay.
Talk about that after the news. Take a quick break. 312-981-7200. By the way, texter from 630. Matt, next time you go to Woodman's, check out the toilet paper in the bathroom.
What? In the store's bathroom?
I'm assuming that
aisle.
Means not what you can buy, but what's actually in the washroom. And I don't know why, but that's a great mystery of America. Why is there
wow.
an interesting... What could it be about the toilet paper? Is it stamped Woodman's? Is it what... Please, 630, illuminate this. I don't know when I'll get to the bathroom at Woodman's. This will be driving me crazy. What's going on in there? All right. Quick break in the news next, 720 WGN. I'm going to do something really annoying here. So 630 sent me a photo of why I need to check out the bathroom at Woodman's.
Uh-oh.
And so I've posted it on our Facebook fan page. So that's our way of luring you all into going to that and then giving us a like there. Go to Facebook.com, search The Matt Bubala Show, give us a like, and there is a very interesting reason why 630 told me to check out the bathroom at Woodman's. You'll see it there. Okay. All right, 2:30 in the morning. Let's get the headlines down, Mr. Battish. Morning, everybody. It's Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in the historic Tribune Tower building. And we're staying up with you till 5 in the morning. Max and Orion will be along with the morning show after that. And then it's a full day of revelry right here on WGN Radio. Before the news, we were talking about, I don't even know how we got into it, Roger, but we're talking about advertising. Roger brought up Mad Men. In the beginning episode, we played a little audio. They're debating how to sell their lucky strikes because they can't use any medical claims anymore. And Don Draper comes up with this moment of, they're toasted.
Yep.
That's what sets them apart. And I had actually been thinking about that scene earlier this week because there's a new Diet Coke campaign out. And it stars Jillian Michaels, who's in a show now on Netflix. She was in Community, which was a great show on NBC for a few years. And it's just very interesting how they decided to go about this Coke campaign. Mm-hmm. And Jess has the audio queued up. Can you go ahead and hit that, Jess?
Look, here's the thing about Diet Coke. It's delicious. It makes me feel good. Life is short. If you want to live in a yurt, yurt it up. If you want to run a marathon, I mean, that sounds super hard, but okay. I mean, just do you, whatever that is. And if you're in the mood for a Diet Coke, have a Diet Coke. Diet Coke. Because I can.
So they've got these new long, tall cans of Diet Coke out that have been in, that I've seen in like mini marts for a while now. And I guess they're selling them in stores now too. And they have all these different flavors. They already had some flavors, but now they've got this other set of flavors that seem to be new. And so the whole thing was, hey, if you want to live in a yurt, live in a yurt. If you want to run a marathon, sounds crazy, but sure, go ahead. If you want a Diet Coke, have a Diet Coke. Life is short. Live it up. And it really reminds me of Pete Campbell telling them, hey, you got to drive a car. I'm going to die.
You're going to die.
I still got to get where I'm going.
Yeah.
Have your cigarette.
Yeah.
Because you still got to get where you're going.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I was like, wow, that's really interesting take on Diet Coke. So there's a story on Market Watch. That might have appeared. So the story was from February 4th. I don't know if that premiered during the Super Bowl or not. It might have. It says Diet Coke's new commercial doesn't appear to shy away from the health concerns over the artificially sweetened soda, but the ad says you should drink it anyway. The new commercial features a young woman, actress Jillian Jacobs, buying a new tall, slim Diet Coke. The campaign by Anomaly Los Angeles features a variety of lesser-known young actors rather than major celebrities like Taylor Swift. Jacobs buys a Diet Coke and speaks directly to the camera. Look, here's the thing about Diet Coke. It's delicious. It makes me feel good. Life is short. Blah, 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 blah. The phrase life is short is usually used in the context of doing something that you know isn't exactly good for you, but you do it anyway. Marathons may not exactly be great for your body, and according to a hefty body of recent research, diet soda may not be that good for you either. In another commercial, the Indian-American actor Karan Sani from the movie Deadpool says, it's not the kind of cherry you bring home to your mom. It may be too feisty. Given the slump in sales of soda, the campaign appears to be attempting to strike a rebellious, tongue-in-cheek tone. It is some branding experts puzzled. To say if you're in the mood for Diet Coke, have a Diet Coke, isn't what a commercial is supposed to be, said Stephen Grazer, professor of marketing at Harvard Business School. That's unlikely to be interpreted as, boy, this is a fantastic brand. We've stripped away the glossy marketing, and we're just telling people how good Diet Coke really is, Daniel Henry, group director of integrated marketing content for Coca-Cola North America, said in a statement. She said a lot of people haven't tasted it in a while or ever. Bob Wittek, founder of Wittek Communications in Washington, D.C., says it emphasizes fizz over facts. It is a remarkable but somewhat refreshingly honest take from Coca-Cola, he says. It suggests accurately they can't pretend Coke is healthy, life-sustaining, or nutritious. Instead, Wittek says it's a commercial that emphasizes populism and defiance over caution and science. They've turned to a more libertarian message that appeals to a sizable number of Americans. It seems to say, be healthy or drink a Coke, and why not just do what you want? Diet Coke sales by volume fell 4.3% last year, while Diet Pepsi sales fell by 7.7%, according to Beverage Digest. But Diet Coke remains a massive brand, Ad Age reported. Even at a 7.7% soda market share, it is the third largest soft drink behind regular Coke and Pepsi. Bottled water consumption in the U.S. hit 39.3 gallons per capita, while carbonated soft drinks fell to 38.5 gallons, the first time that soda was knocked off the top spot, according to recent data from industry tracker Beverage Marketing Corporation. Soda's experienced an annual volume sales decline since 2003. Since 2003, it's been going down.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, because since 2003, more drink options have come onto the market. So there's been a... This is how marketing is.
Well, and also, think about water. Since 2003, mm-hmm. so it's 15 years. I wonder how much bottled water we were drinking in 2003.
Tons. Oh, back then?
I think that's when water was probably starting to really take off, right?
Right. Especially with the different flavors and stuff. But here's what it is. So you have a set amount of people who will drink stuff in cans or bottles. Just people who will, as opposed to not be drinking them.
Okay.
In other words, I'll get a glass of water out of the faucet.
Right.
As opposed to, I'm going to the store, I'm going to buy water. Bottled water, I'm going to buy a bottle or can soda, I'm going to buy beer, bottle or canned beer. So stuff you get in bottles and cans. That number is finite. Consider it a pie. There are different slices of the pie based on what people buy. So when they say a share of the market is not increasing. The market is he's drinking out of a of a that's a cup, isn't it? Oh, nah, see, he's got his bottle. But what is it a bottle of?
Dr. Pepper.
Oh.
Very unhealthy.
Stuff is so good.
It is so good.
No. But you understand what I'm saying. So again, for advertising, we do not have more customers the more drinks that we produce. The more type of drinks we produce.
We just divide the pie,
and so now everyone's getting a smaller chunk of the pie, and a new product will come on, they'll get a bigger chunk, and then over 5 years, they get a smaller. So when they're saying sales dropped, it's sales from existing customers. In other words, people who are in that pie have switched to something else to drink. And as many people who stop drinking soda for those health reasons you said, there are more people who become of age who start drinking that soda. So the number stays basically the same of that pie. And then it depends on how you say. Now, how do you get a bigger chunk of the pie? You appeal to your audience and your potential audience and try to get them. So now instead of the health concerns, which you brought up on that commercial,
yeah.
It's like, hey, you can be healthy running a marathon. You got to be healthy for that, right? You can just be showing up at a party. You can, you know, be typing on your computer. Whatever you want to do. If you feel like having it, just have it. Just be you.
You know, it's interesting because it does, I don't know how much I thought it through, but when the guy mentions that in the article, that she says, hey, if you want to run a marathon, run a marathon. Me, I'm going to have a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, wow, are we saying one or the other? You can be healthy or you can do this? Because that seems like a dangerous gambit for them to just acknowledge, hey, this is not healthy. But doesn't Diet Coke taste good? Because here's the thing, is the only reason I drink Diet Coke is because somewhere in my reasoning, it's this is better than having a Coke because I'm not having 39 grams of sugar.
Right.
I'm having some chemical.
Diet.
I'm having some chemical that I don't know what it's doing to my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And all these studies show, I mean, and they list a bunch of studies in this article on the negative effects of diet soda. But the big one to me is that you actually want to eat more and will maybe make even worse decisions, which is my big downfall, mm-hmm. by drinking the diet soda, because you're tricking your body into thinking you had something, and now your body craves it even more.
Right.
So that's why I have this, you know, actually it's Dr. Pepper, but then I bought M&M's too. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, really unhealthy.
And here's the difference.
And so if they don't be healthy, have a Diet Coke. Now I'm like, well, wait a minute. If I'm going to go with that, why the hell don't I? And I just did buy the Dr. Pepper.
But in the way she delivered it, because believe me, that was not the first take on that commercial. The way she delivered it and the way it is written with the music behind it, and I don't know what the scene is when she is saying it, but the implication is that you can either run a marathon or have a Diet Coke, or run a marathon and have a Diet Coke. Just be you. So the health implications are there, they're suggested, but then it's like, screw the health implications. Just go ahead and run your marathon, and when you're done, have the Diet Coke, or just sit on the sidelines and watch the marathon runners and have your...
Well, it's interesting to me, because to me, the only reason I drink Diet Coke is because it has no calories, no sugar, right? Right. So I feel like I'm avoiding something, like I am doing something good for myself.
But what else has no calories and no sugar?
Water.
Yeah.
There's no taste.
But it depends. Do you want to know?
Well, the flavored waters are huge.
Take a look at them. A lot of them have calories because sugar is put in with the flavoring.
Right.
Now, you see this bottle of water. Right?
Yes. Yeah,
all right. And my little Pellegrino, which I think I keep them in business.
Okay.
I'm willing to pay a little extra for the imported water because I like the taste. But I can take regular lemon juice.
Mm. Just throw
Reconstitution lemon juice, put a little in. I have lemonade with no sugar, no calories, no nothing.
Quite honestly, and I'll tell you this, it's funny, Roger, because it's such a mental thing with me. So many things are.
Well, but you're not alone. You're typical.
Like, you know, I have five or so Diet Cokes a day, more than I should. I would like to try to get it down to two a day. And I say, well, I'll have two at lunch, and then I'm going to just drink water with dinner, bottled water. We have tons of bottled water at home. I'm going to drink water with dinner. And then that's my plan. And then we get to set down the table and do this stuff, and I tell the kids, go grab a couple cans of Diet Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And Colleen's like, I thought you were going to have water. I know, but I want a Diet Coke.
Yeah, no.
And if I actually have the water with dinner, it's mm-hmm. great, and it feels refreshing, and it's good. And I'll say, yeah, I really ought to do this all the time because this is good.
Mm-hmm.
Just by itself as the bottled water. But also, you put a little lemon in water, like you do in a restaurant water, mm-hmm. it tastes great.
It does.
Just a little bit of a slice of mm-hmm. lemon. It's really good, I honestly feel. And yet, you know, what do? There I go.
And I feel your pain, because I used to drink soda like there was no tomorrow. There was a flavor. It was Diet Chocolate Fudge. Seriously. Oh, by God. Canfield's. And it was the only Canfield's flavor that the store still carried. And I used to bump into the delivery guy every so often because I was the only one who bought it. And I would buy every six-pack that he put on the shelf. Diet chocolate. I know. Everyone's like, what the heck is that?
Did it taste good?
Huh?
It actually tasted good?
Yes. I loved it, but other people tried it, and they were disgusted by it.
I'm sure. It sounds terrible.
I could easily drink a six-pack a day. And it was not good for me. And it led to my gaining as much weight as I did. And it also made me want to keep eating, just like you. Yeah. It's not necessarily the sweetener that's in there or the sugar. It's other chemicals in there that trick your brain into doing things like eating more, which then make you want to
drink more. Yeah. It's like them pumping the oxygen into the casinos in Vegas, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so real quick, we got a caller. Hold on 1 second, Brian. I'll get you on the air in a second. But later in this article, Wittick says it's young and reckless gamble. It's a young and the reckless gambit on behalf of Coke. It reminds me of the legions of younger smokers I run into from time to time who believe they know all the health risks and toxicity of tobacco and simply feel they can manage it without addiction and quit whenever they wish. He also says the commercial is perfect for the Trump era. Trump voters object to behaving or speaking in politically correct ways, he says. Some objected to Michelle Obama's healthy diet and fitness advice for kids, believing it was a heavy-handed nanny state doctrine, he ads. It has a political frame to it that suggests some consumers, including younger Americans, want to be unfettered and free to drink what and when and however they can, he says. It may also be no coincidence that Jacobs also takes a daring swig from her Diet Coke before actually paying for it. Oh, that's interesting. And then a texter just wrote... somebody agrees with you. That chocolate soda rocked, they said. But 708 writes, hey, Matt, Diet Coke must be healthy. Trump has 12 a day, he said. Great show.
Does he drink Diet Coke?
Oh, come on. He's got a button on his desk, remember? He's got a button on his desk that when he hits, they bring
him a Diet Coke.
Yes. That was a huge story earlier this year.
All right.
On the White House, on the Oval Office desk, he hits a button, a butler brings him a Diet Coke. He does have... President Trump, boy, we go from Michelle to him. It is not the same. He's, you know, eating the fast food. They say he likes fast food because he knows it's not poison. It's prepared for whoever. It's ready to go. We know he doesn't eat healthy, and he's not a big fitness nut. That's for certain. It's very interesting advertising. That's for sure.
Advertising is a very scientific business.
Brian, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Matt and Roger. Love your show, and I love the subject. I think it's great. You know what? I accidentally was watching Penn and Teller? Penn and Teller.
Sure.
And, they came on with the skit. Well, not a skit. I don't know what you want to call them, a segment. And they had where, you know, they took all the bottled water and they uncapped them and dumped the water out, and then they took from a garden hose out in the back of the restaurant, and I'm talking, this is a high-end classy restaurant where you got to dress to the nines to get in, so this is high money.
Sure.
You know, I mean, big money. And so they filled up out of the hose into the bottle of water and put the caps back on, and they'd bring them out to the table in the restaurant, and then they were surveying them while they were out there, and the people out in the restaurant, they said, the water is fabulous. They loved it. I couldn't believe it. I was laughing so hard, and they didn't know that they were getting garden hose water right from the tap. How about that?
It is fun. Anyways. That's so interesting. Thank you so much for calling in, Brian. I really appreciate it. It happens all the time. So my wife, Colleen, pretty much refuses to drink anything except for Ice Mountain bottled water.
That's understandable.
Hey, do you want an Aquafina? No. A Dasani? No.
Mm-hmm.
She believes that she can, and we meant to do this over the holidays. Mm-hmm. The kids and I had talked that we were going to set her up on a blind taste test and see if she actually can pick out the Ice Mountain. We still need to do this.
Okay.
But she swears by Ice Mountain. It's all we buy. We get to McDonald's where they only have Dasani. She won't buy one. I mean, she is like, it's crazy that she's so set on one water when to me, mm-hmm. I can drink Poland Springs. I can drink
Water is water. It's pretty much water.
Yeah. I really can't tell a difference. And I think it's all in her head.
Well, I'll tell you this. There's two main bottled imported waters. One's French and one's Italian.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the Italian, the Pellegrino.
What's the French one?
I can't remember the name because I don't buy it. Okay. But it's also served in restaurants. I'm sure one of our listeners will let us know.
Okay.
But... And it is carbonated, bottled water, imported. Okay. Right. Most people would say, oh, you can't tell the difference. Actually, if you were to do a blind taste test with me with these two, I would tell you the difference.
Well, I believe that, though, because that's Pellegrino and the other bubble waters, mm-hmm. I do believe, have some sort of taste.
Well, they're mineral waters, and it depends where they're from.
So you're tasting minerals, so there's right. something in that water. It's not just right. you know, spring water.
Mm-hmm. Now, the bubbles are added. It's not coming out bubbly.
Sure, sure.
But because you can get Pellegrino with or without the carbonation mm-hmm. in Italy. You have to order it that way.
Yeah. When I remember being in Europe, yeah. when you asked for water, they'd ask you if you wanted it carbonated.
Con gaz, with or without gas.
What is that? French?
No,
or Italian?
Italian, yeah. Con gaz. That's what I remember being told.
Okay. Oh, Perrier, texter.
Perrier, right? Perrier. See, I told you. So, Perrier. To me, Perrier has a grittier taste to it, and I really don't. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, aftertaste.
Right. And so that's why I don't drink that, as opposed to the Pellegrino. Now, as far as those bottled waters, if you're just drinking a straight bottled water, not flavored or anything, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, fill up your water bottle at home with a filter,
We need to do that. We need to get a filter. We used to have a filter on the fridge, and then the fridge stopped working, and we do not like the tap water. It's hard water, and it has a taste to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not Chicago water. Chicago tap water is good. You can drink water right out of a tap here in mm-hmm. Chicago. Not a problem at all. But in the suburbs, certain places, it's definitely...
Well, it depends where they're getting the water from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. How you doing, Roger? Matt, what I do is Jules got this in her soft drink department, these little boxes of... Remember Crush?
Yeah.
Well, they're little packets that are sugar-free. So I take one of those, I pour it into my water, shake it up. It tastes exactly like the pop was, but it's sugar-free. It's water.
Mm. But is there a sugar replacement in it?
There's got to be.
It says that it's sugar-free. I didn't read the ingredients, but
It probably has Splenda or xylitol or something.
Does it taste sweet when you... I mean, it tastes just like the Orange Crush, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly spot on, just like it.
And there's a lot of Mio. There's a bunch of different little drips that you can put into water these days that are really good and have very few... Have very little sugar, I think, because you're only putting like a couple drops to flavor them.
Mm-hmm.
But those are good.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, great show, man.
All right, Chris. Thanks so much, buddy. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, sir. 312-981-7200. 815 wrote, a George Carlin line was, why would I put in water something my body exhales on purpose? Why would I put in water something my body exhales?
Fungus. Yeah. The bubbles.
815 says, hey, people have different taste buds. DeSanti is awful to me also. Others are yucky also. I also enjoy Ice Mountain. Well, 815, we'll have to get you together with Colleen. You guys can go out and drink some Ice Mountain together. But she'll drink water at most restaurants, although there are some restaurants where we know to avoid the water. But come and see, come and saw. 312-981-7200. Something interesting to talk about after the news, which is next. This week when Jess and I were talking about what we're going to do on the show, I was thinking, you know what? There's so much stuff we could do about the NRA, about the Second Amendment, about guns, about Trump, about Jennifer Aniston breaking up with Justin Thoreau, for goodness sakes. But
they did that?
Yes. See, we're losing the important stories. And I blame him. I'm totally Team Jennifer for like the third different time in my life now.
Please.
But I thought, all right, it was a very heavy show last week.
Yeah.
And why don't we do one where maybe we escape reality a little bit? So I was thinking, and Jess and I were talking about D.B. Cooper. I don't know if you remember Roger.
I do remember D.B. Cooper.
Sure, but like 6 or 8 months ago, I forget when it was, before Jess started, we talked to a guy who wrote a book about D.B. Cooper who thinks mm-hmm. he solved it. And I was thinking about, what are the great mysteries? You know what is coming up in like 2 weeks?
Mm.
The 4th anniversary of something. And it blew me away. 4 years already since that freaking plane disappeared.
Oh,
MH370. Yes. They still
plane?
Don't know where that thing is.
They haven't found anything.
4 years. They have found some stuff, right? There were little pieces that floated up.
Have they confirmed it?
I believe
that those pieces were from
those pieces were from the plane. But maybe that's some big conspiracy. I don't know. But it's going to be 4 years. What is the greatest unsolved mystery of your lifetime? What is the one thing that you're like, God, before I die, I hope they just know blank? 312-981-7200. We're going to get into that after this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. News at 3:01 a.m. There's Roger Badish. The song's called 3 a.m. Huh. What time? Matt Babalo with you here, 720 WGN. Maybe
by the
I'm
way,
wrong about what...
Sorry, got breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Breaking news.
Please, break in.
From the sports desk.
Uh-oh.
They have done it. Gold for the men's curling.
Oh, yay. Was this mustached guy that looks like he just got off the couch and said, hell yeah, I'll curl, let's go.
Yeah, chewing gum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I don't understand. We saw him throughout the Olympics. Was he with his wife earlier, and then he's with men?
No, there's a women's team and a men's team.
Right, but there was also mixed doubles. curling, right?
It's possible. I don't remember that event.
I think that dude was with his wife earlier in the first week. It's been a lot of Olympics.
I know. There's a lot of Olympics.
There was mixed doubles,
I don't even know
curling.
Half of the stuff.
I think there was mixed doubles curling. And then now he's just hanging out with the boys.
He's hanging out with the boys. Yes. And the boys won.
And what's great is there's Russians getting thrown out for doping at the Olympics.
On the curling.
And this dude is just dropping 12-ouncers and throwing that stone.
Yes.
I'm telling you what. He's not working out. He's not taking any illegal substances. He's taking cores and rolling the rock, baby.
You should have seen, there was a video of him from one of the earlier throws tonight or this morning in the championship round. He's chewing gum like there's no tomorrow.
I thought for sure, Roger, you were going to say he launched off the pad to throw the stone and like he had a total plumber's smile going or something like that.
No.
Because that would have been the perfect shot.
No.
That would have been the perfect shot.
You know, he's got the uniform on. He's all
but
decent.
You know, sometimes those pants pull.
You never know.
You're stretching out to lay your stone.
But they had, he got a double on that one I saw.
Yeah. Texter, thank you, Texter 630. They said it was his sister.
That was his sister?
Earlier. Okay. So I think there was mixed doubles. He was with his sister earlier.
Okay.
With his sister in curling, yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
All right, so we're going to get to the Great Mysteries.
So sorry about that.
We're going to get to the Great Mysteries in a minute, but that leads to a couple of quick Olympic notes.
Okay.
One, there was a set of U.S. figure skaters, and by the way, our poorest showing ever in figure skating.
Yeah.
Very sad, although, and the woman from Carpentersville, right by me, we had signs up all over town. What's her name?
Tanel,
yes.
Yeah.
Danny Tanel? Captain and Tanel?
Not Tanel.
Well, that young lady, she was our highest scoring.
Yeah, she won the U.S. championship.
Yeah, and didn't win nothing in the Olympics because we had a really rough time. But they're saying our worst ever showing for skating for the Olympics, so that's sad.
And downhill wasn't so good.
And there was another female who finished lower.
A U.S. female?
Sabuya, yes, a U.S. female. I forget her name. But there was an interview with her where she was just had, oh, God. She was saying how just had such poor Olympic spirit. She's the one that landed the one triple axel.
Mm-hmm.
But then she didn't do it in her free skate program.
Oh.
And she said, well, this was my audition for Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
I saw the news story on that.
How her and so-and-so got us that gold medal. We were going to lose, but I saved us that team bronze. And they were like, the truth is, if she would have fallen in last place, they still had the team bronze. She didn't win anything. It was very poor sportsmanship. Along with the South Korean speed skating team. So I think this was a new event this year, the team speed skating where all three people are going at once and the team only finishes as well as the dead last person.
Right.
And the third person on this Korean speed skating team could not keep up with the other two. And they just left her behind. You know, most of those teams, you saw them in order, like very symmetrical and they're taking turns in front and they're blocking the wind. They're going, well, these two left the other one in the dust and she couldn't keep up and they finished very poorly. And then in the interview afterwards, they just trashed her, saying, well, she couldn't keep up and she held us back, she did this and that. And there was like a huge petition in Korea, people very upset with these other two for bullying her.
Right.
It was very interesting.
And about the gold, Canadian women's hockey team. Did you see at the medal presentation?
I saw it happen live. I had a men's league game that night.
Uh-huh.
And this was on Wednesday night. So late night, I had a game. That game started at 10:10. I had a game at 10:40. So I was all excited. I'll get home for the last period.
Right.
Well, when I'm leaving the rink, the U.S. is down 2-1 with 8 minutes left. I thought, oh, man. I get home. There's 3 minutes left, and it's tied. And now I'm like, this is incredible. So then I watch they end regulation. There's 20 minutes before overtime. So I go shower. I take the dog out. I get settled up on the couch. Michael, one of my 12-year-old sons, had fallen asleep on the couch because he really wanted to watch the game. So I'm trying to wake him up for overtime. He's a complete zombie. Won't even budge. So I watch overtime. Then we go into the shootout, which I just hate that you're going to decide a championship on shootouts.
Right.
But that's what they do, whatever. And then it was that the move by Lamoureux. The game winning goal
was sick.
It was so good. Oh, I mean that was just incredible.
And for her to be able to do that after being gassed from playing so much already for so long.
And the interesting thing is, she didn't go in the first five. You know, they went five aside. You had to have five different shooters. She wasn't one of the first round picks. And after the first five, you could go back to the same person every single time if you wanted to.
Oh, okay.
And so the coach didn't go back to it, already scored. He puts her out there, and then she just like, oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And then, so it was so good to see. And so right as they're giving out the silvers, like the second person in, they put it around her neck, and before the camera moves to the next person, she yanks it off.
She pulls it back
she
off.
She takes it just right back amazing. Off her head. But you know what? Yeah. She wrote the most kind, sincere, apologetic note, and only a Canadian would do this. Such a well-written, thoughtful, hey, I apologize. That is not how I meant to be. It's not how I meant to represent this team or my country. It was the heat of the moment.
And that's what I thought it was,
too. And you can totally understand.
Sure.
As she did it, I thought, oh, wow.
She looked
But I didn't get mad at her. Yes,
yeah.
They were devastated. It's funny because Colleen's like, oh, they win it every year. How can they be so mad? I'm like,
they're athletes. They want to win.
I know, but not all of them have been there every year. And still, you're there. You're not going to go, oh, well, what the hell? We got silver. You want to win that game. And
right.
Here it is. It's not like they got blown out. It's overtime. It's the shootout.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're right at the brink of everything or of nothing. And so I could totally understand where she's like, oh. And just takes it right back off. And she regrets it. And it was, but you're still in the passion of the game. It's not like you've had time to come down and, you know.
Oh, yeah. They did it right afterwards. They didn't even have time to rest.
Well, they gave out the bronzes first.
Yeah, but still, it was right there.
Yes, it was there. And you got to stand there and then watch the U.S. do the whole thing. And
right.
It's tough. So I understand. She didn't throw it away. She didn't refuse to shake hands. She didn't spit on it.
Right.
You know, it was what it was. And so very nice that she wrote such a heartfelt apology, but I don't think the apology was as necessary as, you know, people are getting all upset about. Mm. It wasn't Fergie singing the national anthem. There's another thing. Oh, my God. Did you see that?
No, I've seen the replays.
Oh, man.
I've seen parts of the replays.
All right, Jess, we'll have Jess cue that up.
No.
Because that was...
No.
And listen, I love
Fergie. But if you do that, then you have to bring in other anthem...
No, I don't.
Horrible anthem singer. Yes, you do.
We don't need to play Roseanne, because that's probably the worst one of all time. Has somebody beaten that in the last few years? I don't think they have. There have been some bad ones.
There have been some bad ones in basketball games, football games, baseball games.
Not like this.
Okay.
Fergie tried to get a little too artistic with it, and man, it just spiraled out of control on her. We'll play a little bit. Jess, when you get a chance, will you pull up Fergie's All-Star Game National Anthem from this year? Because that was something else. That was something else. So real quick, before we move on to things. So that was the Curler's sister. Brady is her first. Oh, Brady Tinnell. Brady Tinnell was our Carpentersville figure skater.
Mm-hmm.
Who did great. She wasn't expected to win gold. She did very well. But unfortunately for the U.S. women, it just fell far fast. Somebody else texted, by the way. So a lot of people are talking about water. 312 writes, Matt, I have a friend who has the Berkey water system, which I love. I do not have it because I do not have the counter space for it. It isn't cheap, but the water was the best filtered water I've ever had. I looked up the Berkey water system.
Yeah.
And it you know what it looks like, Roger? It looks to me like, you know, when you go to a hotel or maybe a buffet, but they used to have these big silver canisters that would like have the hot coffee in it.
Yeah,
it's a round, cylindrical, but big. You know, looks like it has 20 or 30 gallons of coffee.
Right.
This is what it looks like. They are huge. And it looks
Was it under the sink? Smaller.
No, you would not fit this under a sink. It's got like the pour spout on the bottom, like the black, you know, you push down and then the hot coffee comes out.
Sure.
But I guess this is for water, and it's a built-in purification system. You must pour water in there. It looks like the big Berkey is $258. The travel Berkey is $228, but the travel does not look almost any smaller than the big Berkey. There's a Berkey Light, which looks like it's basically the big gallons of water that they deliver and then
the big bottles.
It looks like with some sort of filters in it.
That
starts at $231.
But it's all self-contained.
Yeah, you got to add filters into it that you probably switch out, and it looks like you pour water into it, and then boom, you got. You need some space for this thing.
We got two filters, so we have one on the faucet in the kitchen, both Britas.
Mm-hmm.
We got one on the faucet, and there's two designs that you can buy on the Brita And the design we got, because we keep switching out every couple of years, the one we got, I keep bumping stuff into it from the sink, and it's hard to reach around to turn the faucet, but yeah. Whatever. So we do that, but then we've got an in refrigerator one. Mm-hmm. It's a canister.
Yeah.
A clear canister, and you there's a top portion, top level, you pour the water in, and that filters down past a filter. And then it's got the spigot on the front to pour out the
on
water.
The door?
Yeah. Well, it's not on the door. It's on the front of the
container. Oh, you just
container.
Set this inside.
Yeah, you fridge. Just slide it in. It's about as thin as a carton of milk, as wide as a carton of milk.
It's not bad.
And it's long, and it fits in the entire length, and you pull it out a little bit, and the top pulls out, and then you pour the water in, you put the top back on. And then there's a little indicator, like a sticky, peel-off sticky thing. It's the 12 months in a circle, and you move the good to the bad, the blue to the red coloring around every 2-3 months, whatever. And that's what we use.
And why do you do that? Because you should, where you live, you should have good tap water.
Yeah, we're in Chicago, but Bridget doesn't like the taste of the water.
Okay.
I drink more Pellegrino than I use tap water, but I drink a lot of espresso, and so I use the filtered water, and it's, I used to take it straight out of the tap, and she's right, it does taste different.
Yeah, so. we have a, I think it's a General Electric refrigerator, and it has a filter in it that you switch out.
Okay.
Because water runs through it and then goes, makes ice and, you know, pours
in the,
water
in
out
the door.
Door. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And we did that for a while, but, you know, it's like 12 years old now, and something happened with the hose in the back and it wasn't working right, so we just kind of gave up on that. So now we buy way too much water.
Oh, boy.
A texter in Streamwood says, we have Chicago water, but I still filter with my Brita pitcher.
Yeah,
okay, let's... So let's see. Did I cover everything I needed to cover there? I think I did. Now I want to get to the greatest mysteries. People are texting in, and we want yours too. 312-981-7200. Quick break, and let's get started with that next. 720 WGN. Matt Bobala with you. 720 WGN. Trying to get away from some of the news of the world right now, all the bad things going on. We'll get back to reality in a couple of weeks. Actually, next week, Patty's off. I'm also off, Roger. I'm going to be in Los Angeles on Friday going to the Beverly Hills Dog Show.
Woof, woof.
Yes, indeed. We'll be filming some social media videos with Steve Dale there for Purina. And then I've got to go to Vegas for the annual veterinary conference that we go to there. So I'll be gone next weekend.
All right.
I do not know who will be here in my stead. But you guys will have fun without me. What, Jess?
No.
Why'd you just cough in
my ear? I'll miss you. Who are you again? What?
Oh, Steph, or Jess is giving me, what? You need to turn your microphone on when you're talking. We're on the air and you're telling me things. Why don't you just turn the microphone on? Have you been producing me for a year now? Has it been a year yet that we've been together?
I think so.
All right, it's time to just start turning on the mic.
Join it's the just, program.
Yes, just jump in. When you got something to say, it's okay.
Just
turn it
a
on.
Habit.
Just, okay, we're going to get past it. So I'll be gone, but... I know. Why was I telling you any of that for? What was I leading to there?
We'll get along without you, you said, or what?
Me, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we'll get back to reality next time I'm back on the air.
There you go.
Because we're avoiding it kind of this week. So in 2 weeks, we'll get back to that. But this week, I wanted to try and just, let's talk about some other things. And I saw that coming up on March 8th, it is the four-year anniversary of MH370, the Korean airliner. Yeah. That disappeared, that we had such wild stories about, you know, that what could have happened. We've talked multiple times with different people on the airwaves here, books that have been written about it. And I believe that, you know, Roger, maybe we'll talk about this in 2 weeks, Jess. Maybe we should get on David Soucy or one of the other people that wrote about MH370 for an update. Pieces of it have been found. I thought, Roger, that they were confirmed to be from that plane, but I guess we'd have to go back and look because they found a couple and then they assumed they'd find a ton more and then they didn't. So who knows what's going on with that? And also, D.B. Cooper, we've talked about him on the show before too, the story about a guy in, I think it was 71 or 74, who hijacked a Boeing 727, I believe it was. That was the three-engine plane that had the staircase in the back. Mm-hmm. He got him to put like $2 million or $200,000 on the plane. Mm-hmm. He parachuted out and nobody knows if he ever
survived. Into the forests
in the Great Northwest. A gentleman we've talked to on the show before, I believe it's Thomas Colbert, the last time he was in the news, the FBI finally closed down for good the investigation, though they said they would investigate new leads if they came, but they closed it down as an active investigation, and the History Channel had a story that Colbert was part of, like a new documentary, and they believe they know the guy. He lives in San Diego. They are convinced that dude is D.B. Cooper, that guy won't admit it. But that's a great mystery. We've talked to, is it Chris Williams, Jess, who follows Amelia Earhart? And remember that picture came out earlier this year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Was she or wasn't she?
Was on this island.
Yeah.
Those are some of the great mysteries of life that I hope will get solved before we kick it.
Yeah.
A texter, Dave, said, I want to know what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. And They still haven't found him. We don't know whatever happened to Jimmy Hoffa. 815, this is interesting because I've never heard of it. 815 says, the biggest mystery of my lifetime is what's buried on Oak Island. What the heck?
Where's that?
I don't know. 815, we need more details. What in the world is Oak Island?
Where is Oak Island? What part of the state or the country or the world?
Or are you just making something up?
Yeah.
You'll have to tell us about that. Some might say Kennedy. We'd like to know what
still
truly
want to know.
Happened with Kennedy.
Lot of people still believe that there was a conspiracy.
A lot of people still believe that.
The gunman they arrested was not the gunman.
Oswald.
That he couldn't have done it, and that it was a conspiracy when he was killed, and by Jack Ruby. And there is still a lot of questions surrounding that.
And what I'd love to know is that an easily solvable mystery? Are there things that are under lock and key? You know, are there classified documents that would say something?
Well, those records were just released.
Some of them were. I don't believe everything.
Not all of them, but a lot of them were. And then I remember hearing several months back that some evidence that had been around had been destroyed long time ago, that it was not kept properly or it was thrown out or whatever, wasn't considered. And just so many questions.
So there's that.
I've got a mystery. I want to know who wrote the Book of Love. Who put the ram and the ram-a-lama ding-dong? No. I'm sorry.
As I mentioned, I will not be here next week. I will not be missing Roger. All right, hold on. I've got more information on Oak Island.
Oh, good.
Oak Island is a... Hold on. Now when a new text comes in, the whole screen changes on you. Oak Island is an island off of Nova Scotia, reportedly, that has buried treasure on it from the Templar Knights, or so. They have been digging there for 150 years. The Templar Knights, isn't that from his... Wait a minute. Is that a real thing, the Templar Knights?
I thought
Templar Knights was from like the Nicolas Cage movies or something.
Yeah.
So this is something real?
Something on something in North America with the Templar Knights? That's the first I've heard of it.
He said it's in Nova Scotia.
Yeah.
Oak Island, North America. Off of Nova Scotia, reportedly has buried treasure on it from the Templar Knights.
Well, what is the story that was just in the news about the guy who died searching for this buried gold?
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
We'll get to
that. All right.
331 says, there's a show about Oak Island on History Channel. I just got hooked on it this last week.
Mm.
All right, so I'm going to have to look that up.
All right.
Now I got to find out what that is. I'd never heard of that, that's for sure. Texter says, mine would be the airliner that disappeared over the ocean last year, I think. Ha! No 708, 4 years ago! I know, and sometimes you're like, oh, was that just last year? No, that was four stinking years ago.
But there was a second plane that went down more recently.
Not that disappeared. Disappeared, is there? That we didn't solve?
I think the second one they found parts of. They found, like, more parts. But there was, like, two of them. And I think they were both Korean Airline planes.
Malaysia Airlines had a bunch of accidents, but... I don't know that there's any other mystery one. I don't think there is.
No, I mean, well, the one you're
Malaysia
talking about
got shot down, wasn't it?
No, no, this was a second one that
Russian
went down.
Shot down something,
no,
something?
That was. I'm talking over where your mystery plane was went down.
Mm.
There was another one that went down there a couple of years after Russia shot down. Has been accused. Has been accused of shooting down a plane, but that was over by there.
Texter says the Tylenol murders. That yeah. never did get solved, did it?
They had a court case, but the person who did it, I don't think was ever found.
And that was 82-ish? Am I right on that?
Ooh, I want to say it earlier.
Okay. Stonehenge? They still don't exactly know how
that got
there.
Even though I saw a documentary, PBS documentary, on how they think it got built.
Stonehenge?
Yeah. And how they moved those rocks there and built that. It was very detailed. And this was about maybe a year ago I saw it on PBS.
Okay. Off the
yeah. And that it was connected to other similar. They actually tried to trace it down to which nationality, which race actually built it. Was it
because the
Vikings?
The big mystery is the stones that are there, which are like 10,000 pound stones,
right,
are not stones
from there.
Anywhere near
right.
that area.
But
they would have
had
to come from thousands of miles
this
away.
This is what the documentary showed.
How they did it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you figure out what that is, you send me a link.
Okay.
What about the pyramids? We still don't really know how the pyramids happened, right?
No.
So those are some great mysteries.
Yeah.
Is there, and here's one, if you think about it, well, do any great mysteries ever get solved? There was one, wasn't solved, but it was revealed. Do you know, what do you think, what in your mind, what's the biggest reveal of the last 20 years? Where there was something that really perplexed people and you didn't know, and then suddenly you're like, oh, now we know.
Well, let's see.
There's a movie coming out about it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I would say Capone's vault.
No, that was the biggest bust, and that was more than 20 years ago. That was at least 30 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, really? Already?
I'm going to guess.
God, I'm losing track of time.
I think that was like 30 years ago.
Oh, jeez.
So, no, not that.
And there's a movie coming out?
Yes. I've seen some previews.
Tomb Raider?
Is that real? What? That's a video game.
It's a remake of the...
It's a remake of a movie about a video game. Tomb Raider is based on a video game, right? Laura Croft Tomb Raider was a video game.
Yes.
Then Angelina Jolie, and now it's being remade.
Yes.
Roger, keep up. Come on.
Sorry.
I know I said we're going to avoid reality this week, but not like completely. Not like now we're just talking fictional characters all night. Deep Throat.
Oh.
Remember the guy that was Deep Throat? Was it Mark Felt?
Mm-hmm.
I think. Came out and admitted
there's a movie on Amazon.com. Amazon Prime.
There's a movie being released in the theaters, I believe. Because I've seen trailers in the theaters.
I just saw it on Amazon Prime. I haven't seen it, but I've seen the ad for it. Hold on a second.
The movie came out yet.
Well, oh my gosh.
I think it's called, it's the guy's name. It's not called Deep Throat. It's called like,
it's Felt. Yeah.
It's Felt.
Yeah.
I guess they figured they couldn't use Deep Throat as the title. Too soon.
Well, oh, God.
Is it Mark Felt?
Let me
I think that movie's still coming out. I think it's like this summer or something. Or in the spring.
If you know what? It's on Amazon Prime right now.
It's
Initial
called-
release, October 26, 2017 in Brazil. Peter Landesman is the director. A memoir of Mark Felt, published before his death in 2008, has been turned into a hectic, intermittently intriguing, and accidentally timely procedural thriller, starring Liam Neeson.
So that already came out?
Yep. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
I've seen it, and I've been wanting to look at it, but thinking it was a bad movie.
It must not have done
It's got a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 34% on Rotten Tomatoes. 75% like the movie.
Yeah, it came out September 20th, yeah. 29th. Yeesh.
Yeah, so it's on Amazon Prime already.
Whoops.
As soon as I saw the picture of the cover, I said, yeah, I know. I've seen it for weeks on Prime.
It's funny because when I saw the previews in the theater, I remember thinking I was worried about Liam Neeson because he'd lost a lot of weight for that role. I mean, he was skinny for that role.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, boy. Is he not doing well? But, well, that came and went, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
But there's a mystery of our lifetime that got solved, or at least revealed. The guy came out, didn't have to solve it, but he said, hey,
right.
It was me. So there's that. Which one, you know, if Roger, you and I were on our deathbed and the good Lord came down and said, okay, you guys aren't going to like what's happening next, but I'll grant you one wish. I'll solve one mystery for you before you go. What would you want?
This is going to may rankle some feathers.
Okay.
Jesus.
You're going to ask God to explain Jesus to you?
Explain it.
Well, what?
Show it.
Show him?
Yeah.
Before you die?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you get that right afterwards?
No, right afterwards doesn't.
Well, once you die. Well,
you've got to understand. All right.
I understand that. Listen.
I question things in life.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, that's right, and you're Jewish, too.
I'm Jewish.
So you're not supposed to believe in Jesus at all.
If we were, well, not necessarily. We believe that.
Believe he was the Son of God, correct?
We don't believe that he was what the Jews considered to be the Messiah.
Okay.
So Jews do believe that there will be a Messiah. Someone comes along as a representative of God, direct representative of God, who will make things right. So if you remember, Jesus was born a Jew.
Well, he was
according
Jewish his
to
whole
historical.
Life. He never renounced his Judaism. Right?
No, he did not. His followers became a sect of Judaism and became the Catholic religion. Just like there are different offshoots of that religion.
Sure.
A lot of different faiths. My concern is my wonder is, are all of the things that Jesus has been credited with in the Bible, I want to see that they are true.
Well, I would say,
because if there was one, why aren't there more? I just have questions.
If there was one Jesus?
If there was one miracle worker, why haven't there been more since? Have we not? This is my philosophy, the way my brain works, which is why I got in trouble in school.
Hmm.
Has not humanity needed corrections over the millennia?
You would think.
That the all-powerful would send down a messenger who would be able to do miracles and straighten us out.
Well,
these are things that go through my brain.
You just went straight for the deepest possible.
But I've thought of decades.
You're sitting around having a drink with Roger. Somebody's like, yeah, I really want to know about Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah, I want to know about Jesus.
Why not?
Well, there's no, listen, I don't disagree.
And I don't mean to be disrespectful or blasphemous or anything.
I've
had these thoughts since I was a kid, actually.
Of course, I think it makes a lot of, especially coming, it's interesting because I don't know. I have not walked in your shoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Growing up Jewish,
mm-hmm.
in such a Christian society,
mm-hmm.
which is what we truly have here in America, despite what some people believe is this attack on Christianity. This is an incredibly Christian nation. We do say Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm. We have holidays around these things. It's very much Jewish or Christian based, mm-hmm. I would say, at least the way we look at things. And so to grow up not believing in that,
mm-hmm.
or not, you know, believing all these—that's just very interesting.
Well, being raised in the Jewish religion, and then seeing this world around you, and wondering not not why there's a difference. I understand the differences based on historical texts. I understand the differences based on beliefs. I understand the differences. But at its core, I want to know how something so dramatic, something so miraculous could have happened and has never happened since.
Well,
I wonder. It's a mystery to me.
Well, here's my silly question about this.
Okay.
So you're dying, mm-hmm. and God comes to you and says, I'll answer one question. And you say, okay. I want to know about Jesus. And what if God looks at you and says, I got bad news, Roger. Everything the Christians were saying is true. You're on the wrong side of this.
And I would say, dope. Now you tell me.
Do I have a moment? Can I just...
You got a minute? You
know, can I convert real quick? How does this work now?
Yeah, right.
Well, it's interesting. So, a couple... Here's my quick theories on it. Right. Boy, I meant this to be a lighter segment.
Sorry about that.
Right, that's okay. That's okay.
I'm known to bring down the house once in a while.
That's all right. Well, one thing I would say is, A... It's, you know, so much of this, and I know that we, you know, people will start saying science says Jesus actually lived and all these things, and I think we take so much of it. It's called faith for a reason.
I understand.
We just believe in these things, and these were written in books. I mean, listen, we know now that, you know, I just had this discussion with my kids the other week with the triplets who are driving in the car,
mm-hmm.
and I forget what happened, but they're talking, because they go to a Catholic school, and so they get, you know, drilled on these things.
Sure.
And they bring up something from the Bible. And I said, well, guys, the way I look at it is the Bible was written a really long time ago. And especially if you look at the Old Testament,
mm-hmm.
where God did this and God did that. In my personal feeling is a lot of these stories were written to help us have a reason for existing and to not be scared of the dark and what happens after our life ends. And I'm like, you know, look at the whole Adam and Eve story.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah. And I said, well, who did Adam and Eve have as children? And they said, Cain and Abel. And I said, and where did it go from there? If those two were the creation, how did we keep going? And then Michael goes, yeah, and one of the brothers killed the other one.
Right.
And it's like, you know, so we know that that wasn't just the start of our human race and how it went. So we know that the stories are, you know, a lot of the old stories especially were created, right, to... for whatever reason, but it's so long ago and we don't know. And we even know the Gospels were written down hundreds of years after Jesus lived and,
right.
and things like that. So,
and by many, many people.
So we take, so, yeah. we take it on faith and believe whatever we believe.
Sure.
And so we just don't know the reality of any of that.
Right.
And my faith is that we believe Jesus was the Son of Man who came down to, but then it's a good question. Why has there never been another messenger? And so, so the Jewish faith believes that there will be
a Messiah who, at some point.
But so in our religion, Jesus mm-hmm. came down to set us straight. And
right.
when he comes back, end times, and then it's over. Mm-hmm. The Jewish faith believes that somebody
okay.
will come down and set things right, and the earth will go on.
Right. Yes.
And why didn't the Jewish people believe that Jesus was that guy?
I don't know.
Isn't that fascinating?
I don't know. Well, it was... if you believe the historical text, if you believe the Bible, if you believe all that stuff, mm-hmm. that the Jewish religion at that time was not exactly on solid footing, and they were all worried for their existence and their lives with the invading forces and the rulers coming in from other lands. And so they tried to play it safe, and I don't know. It's again. I want to know. I do, because this got drilled into us. I went to Sabbath school as a kid. I went to Hebrew school. You know, my Tuesdays and Thursday nights. For several years, were taken up with Hebrew school, and my Saturday and Sunday mornings, depending on how old I was, were taken up by Sabbath school. And these were stories and information that were given to us. So I have questions, too.
Yeah.
I'm not questioning religion.
Sure.
I'm not questioning beliefs. I just... And I'm not questioning myself. I just am curious.
Well, I think, listen, it's healthy to question things and not just take everything. Listen, we have to all have our faith in whatever believe in, but it wouldn't make sense not to question things a little bit. The interesting thing I think about is, go back to those times.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Jewish faith believed that God would send a Messiah, somebody down to da-da-da, mm-hmm. and then here's Jesus, and people are like, well, this is the guy, and then other people are like, that's not the guy. What a tough decision to be making at the time.
You're right.
Like, you know, for the higher-ups in the church, they're like, you know, that guy, he's not the guy. Is he the guy? I don't think he's the guy. Well, we got to be right about this. So he's not the guy. And then they, you know, they execute him, the whole thing. Right. You got to think they're thinking, oh, my God, if that was the guy, we are so in trouble here.
No.
You know what I mean?
But, sure. No, I understand.
But think at the time. Think about if somebody came out now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so somebody is saying, "I'm the Son of God," or doing miracles or whatever. Mm-hmm. A, it would be so hard to. I mean, if miracles were really happening now, we'd be able to prove it so easily, right? Like there'd be video, or there'd be this or that. Like, wow, that's really happening.
But do you think that nowadays, if someone like that was amongst us,
I think they'd
think the people of this world would accept him?
Well, that's a great question.
Or her.
I mean, or would that be like some sort of cult? And that's it. We're watching the Waco. I've told you about this. The Paramount channel mm-hmm. on cable mm-hmm. has this Waco 6-part miniseries right now, which is fascinating and really well done and really well. I mean, it's just so good. There's one episode left. If you have on demand, get it and start watching it because it's just really phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, David Koresh felt that God put him there to do this, that there were these seven seals that were being, and I don't know my Bible well enough to know about these seven seals, but this was all happening, and then God was sending a sign and all these things. He believed that he had to do these things because God was telling him to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would look at that as that's kind of wacko, right? That's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And it would be very tough for somebody who was actually a divinity to convince people in this world.
Sure.
And the people that believed, we'd look at askance like, oh God, mm-hmm. really? You know? So I don't know how that would go these
and
days.
And how would our religious leaders handle something like that?
Well, that's a great question.
They're very invested in their churches, their synagogues, their temples, their flock, their existence, the financial aspects of religion, the political aspects of religion. How would that be looked on now?
I don't know. I guess it would depend on if they believed in what they were seeing. If they believed it really was a mm-hmm. sign from God, then I imagine they would go along.
And what would the miracle be or the miracles be? Would someone come down and stand on a street corner in the middle of Chicago or New York or L.A. or wherever and say, boy, you guys have really screwed this up. Snap the finger, everything's fine. Or would they walk around and just kind of go, you know what, you need to walk, you need food on your table, and very quietly, and then the word just starts spreading around. And
well, you know what's interesting, Roger, is that when's the last time there was like considered a miracle on Earth? That there was a vision?
Well, the Catholic Church, didn't they just...
We keep canonizing people.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. When I was growing up Catholic, it was they had to have performed 3 miracles.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they've really loosened up those restrictions. Suddenly we've canonized a bunch more saints. And I don't, you know, it's a lot harder these days, right? Because there's so many ways for there to be actual evidence,
mm-hmm.
video, or, you know, we write things down. I mean, the whole world is recorded.
Right.
And people aren't, in my mind, maybe I'm not reading enough or knowing enough, but in my mind, we're not having visions of Mary like we had in, what, Guadalupe or Lourdes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Things that happened back when the world could not, when things could not be proven and people would believe people.
Right.
People don't believe people anymore because you can, well, record that on your phone or what did you see or how is this? And there's so many Mythbuster shows and Bigfoot sightings and all this.
Right.
We just, you know, we make entertainment of it. So it is interesting that when people aren't, I don't believe, credibly believed to have had visions or things like that lately. Why doesn't God come down? Why doesn't God send us a sign?
Right.
Well, one could argue because maybe that's all made up. That's what one side would argue. Another side, I would say, God doesn't act like that. Right. God doesn't send, I don't believe that God sends signs here and there and does this or that. I believe God created whatever we got here, and then he stepped aside. And it's up to us to make the best of it. In my mind, if God was really watching out for anybody, looking over anybody, doing things like that, I wouldn't know 8-year-old kids with cancer.
Exactly.
God wouldn't do that.
Believe it or not.
In my mind.
This was a question I raised in my one of my classes senior year at Evanston High School. And I just blew the teacher away. And because that's what I asked. I asked exactly that. I says, if God is this omnipotent being, essence, then why isn't God here and here and here and here and here and here and here? Why do we have this and this and this and this and this? If God is this benevolent being, why do we have these issues?
Well, and I don't believe that means that God isn't benevolent or isn't omnipotent or isn't all-knowing or all-present. Mm-hmm. It just means, you know, we also wrote in the Bible that he gave us free will.
True.
So I don't believe when people say this happens for a reason, I believe that's our way of comforting ourselves. This happened for a reason. That's our way of saying, so it was meant to be. Well, I don't think anything is truly meant to be. I think we make what we make out of the world. Bad things happen all the time, not because God wanted that to happen or because you have to go through some tests, because sometimes the world just sucks, and that's how it is. All right, we got to catch up on break.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Roger, for that left turn. So Jimmy Hoffa, huh? Yeah. Oh, and Jesus, that one too. What cracks me up about the whole thing, though, is that, like, I wanted you to say, yeah, I really wanted to know, was there life on other planets? Or, you know, where was Amelia Earhart? Or what happened? And you're like, I want to know about Jesus. And I'm thinking, Roger, we're about to die. He'll tell you in two more minutes. Let's figure out something from Earth.
All right, I want to know if there's life on other planets.
God, can I take that one back? Can I get a second shot at that one?
Please.
720 WGN. Happy Saturday morning, everybody. Matt Bobala with you here, 720 WGN. Thanks for joining with us. Thanks for staying up late. Thanks for getting up early. Couple of quick things before we get to Andrew Wittenberg, our friend from KSL in Salt Lake City, who's wrapping up about a month in Pyeongchang, South Korea. A15 says, I guess it's one of the ironic things about religion, really. If there was proof in video, it wouldn't be faith. That's a good point. 815 says Lot's wife became a pillar of salt. Jimmy Hoffa became a pillar in a New Jersey football stadium.
Good one.
Yes. 815 mentions the visions of Fatima. Another 815 says there was more than one Adam and Eve. I've never heard that, but okay.
Next door neighbors.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get to Andrew Wittenberg in just a second. Also, before we get out of here, I was just reading a story about Making a Murderer, which was a fascinating Netflix documentary from a couple years ago about Stephen Avery up in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, who had been released from jail when DNA evidence cleared him of a crime, and then was thrown back in jail for committing another murder, which he did or did not commit. And that's been, in fact, a local attorney, Kathleen Zellner, has recently taken up the case, and it's been in the news a lot. There's not only a sequel to that coming, but another version of Making a Murderer coming out, I'll tell you about in a little bit. We'll talk with Andrew, get the latest on what's going on as we start to wrap up the Winter Olympics. That's next here on 720 WGN. Thanks to the calls coming in. I can't get you because we got Andrew Wittenberg, our buddy. One last report from Pyeongchang, Korea, coming up after the news, which is right now. Roger Badish. It's the Bulls versus Butler, round two. The Bulls take on Jimmy and the T-Wolves tonight at 7:30 on WGN TV Sports. Let's go to Pyeongchang one last time for one more check-in with our friend Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City. Hey, Andrew, how are you this morning?
What's up, Matt? How are you?
I'm good. Hey, thanks again for being so willing to chat with us every week here during the Olympics. You are on, like, are you on week three or week four of being in Pyeongchang?
Yeah, we are getting toward the end of week three, I believe.
Wow.
I have my days right. We're here grand total 25 days, so we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here.
No kidding. And Andrew, I don't know if I've asked you this previously, but did your wife come with you on the trip or did she stay back home?
No, she's back in Salt Lake with our little boy, and some family came out to help out and hang out, so that's been really nice. So a lot of FaceTime, a lot of phone calls, and the technology's definitely made it nice this time around. It was pretty much the same in Rio, but with a little guy, it's been nice to have the FaceTime.
I'm sure.
My son's 14 months old, so yeah, he's getting around pretty good and been able to see Dad a little bit while I've been gone.
This had to be tougher than the previous Olympics you've been at, I would think, with a little boy at home.
Right, yeah, a little bit, for sure. I mean, it definitely is pretty surreal to be this far away, and, you know, my wife will send me pictures and stuff, and we'll FaceTime, and, you know, he's kind of starting to chatter a little bit more and talk a little bit more, so, yeah, some of that will, like, every once in a while, kind of pull the old heartstrings, but overall been pretty good and really nice to be able to FaceTime. The Wi-Fi over here, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, the Wi-Fi is just outstanding everywhere. They have, like, 5G technology in some spaces in Olympic Park, so... the internet connectivity here has been unreal.
Well, that's good. That's really good. I'm sure that's helped out quite a bit. Yeah. Hey, with him being 14 years old, so when you're on television, is he at an age yet where he sees that and says, oh, that's Daddy? Or at 14 months, is he not picking up on that yet?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. Quite picking it up on TV, necessarily. My wife was saying, yeah, I've been trying to, you know, show him and point to the TV and whatever, but... Definitely on FaceTime. He definitely recognizes, and he'll kind of get a little excited when he sees Dad pop up on the cell phone.
If you follow Andrew at KSL Andrew on Twitter, at KSL Andrew on Twitter, you'll get to see, I think your new profile pic is you put up a picture, or your pinned tweet is of you and the little guy, right?
Yeah, that's my little boy. That's cute. Hunter. So. Cute.
Now, I've been following you on Twitter all week. I know you got to go to the gold. Did you go to the gold medal curling game?
Man, I tell you what, did we just get incredibly lucky? So, it's late Saturday night here. And so, not late Saturday, it's just now 7:15, but Saturday night here. And just so happened that I had a little bit of free time this afternoon. So we went to the gold medal curling game. And man, it was amazing. John Schuster, not too far up the road from you guys from Wisconsin, he finally gets a little bit of redemption, gets the gold medal for the curling over Sweden in like this. I mean, and I don't follow curling to a great degree, but I mean, it was absolutely thrilling in the eighth end to get a 5-point end, a draw. It was just unreal there. And a lot of Americans in the crowd, they went crazy. And USA, for the first time, gets that gold curling medal.
Now, the gentleman you just said who gets revenge, is that the mustachioed gentleman that we've been seeing so much of?
No. So that's okay. Hamilton. John Schuster is the skip, and he's been there. I think this is his fourth Olympics.
Oh, okay.
Since Torino, maybe. And he got the bronze in Torino, but been a little bit of a disappointment as far as curling goes since then. And, man, have they come through. They knocked off the Canadians, who were favored in the semifinals to get into the gold medal game, and then they come through and win the gold just within the past hour. It was cool to see. And it's so weird because in the curling rink or the arena where curling is going on, it's so quiet. I mean, it's like unlike anything you've ever seen. It's like a golf tournament being held indoors where everything's so quiet. And, you know, there were probably, you know, 5,000 people. It's a pretty small arena.
Yeah.
Maybe 5,000 people in there. But, like, you could audibly hear the entire conversation going on between the guys curling. It was really cool. It was very different of an experience.
Now, about a day ago, you posted a photo of you with a stone and with the brush. Did you get to actually do a little bit of curling?
No, we were just kind of messing around. We were able to get that sort of on loan from the women's team, the USA women's curling team. They were done with their competition here, and so we were able to sort of finagle a broom and a stone from them for some of our live shots we've been doing for the morning shows. Had a little bit of fun with people in Olympic Park, you know, messing around, doing the curling, practicing their sweeping and that sort of thing. So didn't actually get up there on the ice, but no, it was cool. It was really fun and definitely something that it's huge. I mean, it's like you say, you like the Winter Olympics better than the summer because it's stuff you see every 4 years and maybe never hear of any other time.
Yeah.
This was totally that. I mean, curling literally took these games over. Because it was on TV every night on one of the networks. It was being played every night because the tournament's so long between men and women and the mixed teams. It was just wild. And, I mean, people by the end of this were just going crazy over the curling. So that was pretty cool to see.
I see that you also got a picture with Lindsey Vonn this week.
I did, yeah. She was making the rounds after her competition was wrapped up. She won the bronze in the downhill, had a DNF in the Alpine combined. She straddled a slalom like a gate, and so didn't finish in the Alpine combined, but sort of disappointing. But no, I mean, I think she cemented a pretty firm legacy. She's certainly been great for a long time with all the World Cup wins.
Yeah.
And now another medal at the Olympics. I think, you know, a lot is being made of her sort of political commentary on social media and whatnot. But certainly as far as just on the ski hill goes, she's got to be one of the greatest American skiers of all time.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. I didn't follow the combined. I did see live, I believe, the other night when she did the downhill run. She was in first place going into the slalom portion of that, or whatever the second portion is called. So I didn't realize.
Yeah, and the combined, yeah, she did exceptionally well. She had a better downhill run in the Alpine combined than she did in the actual downhill event.
Yeah.
And then slalom isn't her specialty. And, you know, just kind of straddled one of those gates, didn't quite make it through, and then, you know, off course. And so that's what. But, I mean, she talked about it at great length. And so when I took the picture, she was making the rounds through our, like, NBC compound doing interviews and was on the Today Show and everything. And she was great. I mean, she said, look, I'm 33, you know, the oldest American woman to ever medal in a skiing event. And perhaps, if I'm right, I want to say she might be the oldest woman ever to win a skiing medal. And, you know, this is a success for her. I think she looks forward. She may or may not finish the World Cup season. And then who knows beyond. I mean, she's got a world of possibilities ahead of her. And regardless of what, you know, anyone thinks about her politics or whatever she's said on social media, you certainly can't discount what she actually does when she gets the skis on.
Yeah. Well, as long as you brought up politics, so the news here has been that Ivanka and Sarah Huckabee Sanders are now in Korea for the closing of the games. And, you know, the administration announced new and tougher than ever sanctions on North Korea just in the last 24 hours. What's the political climate there right now?
Ironically enough, it was sort of a celebrity situation because Ivanka and Sarah Huckabee Sanders were both in the curling match where we were. And I mean, they were enjoying a little bit of celebrity status. There were a lot of people and we saw her. I'll tweet out a picture here when I get back to our workspace, but we saw her. We were able to see her. There wasn't like a massive security presence around her. Certainly there was some Secret Service, but not a massive presence. She wasn't in like a luxury box or suite or anything. She was just right there in the stands, and people were coming up left and right to take pictures with her, Americans and Koreans. So that was my, you know, initial take. Now, we'll see what happens with the political ramifications here with all this news coming out that there was a meeting that was called off, you know, perhaps between Pence and the North Koreans, and then, you know, Ivanka Trump here is sort of part of the delegation and closing and these new sanctions. I'm curious to see how that plays out over the next 24 hours leading up to the closing ceremonies. Yeah, as far as from my actual perspective of what I just saw in front of me an hour ago, she was certainly getting a little bit of the celebrity treatment. People just wanted to take selfies with her. We saw like a mom come up and give her a small child to hold and take a picture with a small child. So interesting, you know, that amidst all this geopolitical tension and turmoil that, you know, she still is a name and a brand and something that people just sort of gravitate to.
Yeah, no kidding. So as the games are about to close, are the closing ceremonies tonight there, like in a few hours, or is it tomorrow night there?
Tomorrow, so it'll be Sunday night.
Okay.
Here, which is, you know, about 24 hours from now, and then they'll air on Sunday night on tape delay in the States. So probably, I don't know, 12 hours or so after they happen here.
Sure. Okay. So as things are starting to wrap up, what do you think the long-term, you know, memory of the games overall is going to be? Is South Korea going to say, boy, that was a success, that was an economic driver that put us on the map? Or are we going to, is it going to be one of these clickbait slideshows in 15 years about abandoned Olympic venues?
Right. I think that's a great point. I think it's going to live on a little bit better than Rio has, certainly, and Athens and Beijing.
Sochi.
Some of those pictures that you see, Sochi, very similar. I think this will have a little bit better longevity as far as its legacy. I think for Americans, they'll look back at these games with the U.S. women's hockey team, perhaps even curling, being historic and getting the gold medals. And although it wasn't a terribly successful games for us in the medal count as far as being one of the top two or three countries. I think we're in fourth position still. Quite a game. As far as like facilities and things go, it seems as though there's a better plan in place for the long term with the facility. Short track speed skating is an obsession here, and a number of the arenas, the venues, will actually be converted into short track speed skating camps. So you would hope to see something like what we have in Salt Lake, where a lot of our venues are still in use. And I think that will happen. I think the South Koreans have a little bit better plan moving forward than we've seen some of those others.
By the way, that reminds me, you brought that up, the women's hockey team. I was up watching it live, and you were there, and you have a great video on Twitter from your perspective in the stands of when the American goalie makes the save on the final shot and the team all jumping off the bench. And it's really cool because it's not the angle you see on television. You're just set back, and you kind of see everything and really see the crowd. So if you follow at KSL Andrew on Twitter, you can see what he shot from the stands. What was it like to be there? You said that's the first time you've ever witnessed a gold medal for the Americans actually happen live, right?
Yeah, I would say, I think what I maybe tweeted out there was something along the lines of it was the greatest live sports finish that I've ever seen in person. It was unreal. I mean, the emotion in the room was just fantastic. It was a lot of Americans in there. I couldn't put a finger on it. Maybe 60% American U.S. fans. And it was, I mean, there were a lot of Canadian fans as well, and that's certainly a bitter rivalry. So I may be a little bit off on the numbers there, but man, they were so loud. In the end, in the third period, when they came back to tie it, and the overtime where they had all the chances, it was great. It was real. It was as thrilling of a finish as I've ever seen. And certainly being there in person and watching it live, and the sort of bonus of it being at an Olympics, and all of the back and forth that had happened between Canada over the years and the two straight losses in the gold medal game, the drama of it all was created for one of the greatest finishes I've ever seen. And, you know, that's to say, I mean, I've seen a couple of Super Bowls. I was there at the Patriots and that Super Bowl a few years ago against the Seahawks with that goal line stand or the interception at the end. And I went to, you know, I went to school down south where football is a religion and saw a lot of big games. But yeah, I mean, this had a feeling. This really did in the building. And I don't know if it translates to television, because I think that's one thing at the Olympics. Sometimes the intensity doesn't translate over to TV.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was one of the best just vibes I've ever been around in sports, ever.
Well, I got to tell you, watching that live, I still skate men's league hockey. And so I get home from my game late enough that there's 3 minutes left in the game and the U.S. had tied it. When I left the rink, they were down. I get home and they're tied, and I watched that overtime, and it was awesome. And the U.S. dominated that overtime period to the point where I thought for sure Canada's just going to come down and score a fluke goal to end this thing, because the U.S. was all over them. And then the shootout and Lamoureux's move was so ridiculous when she scored that goal.
The oops, I did it again, yeah.
Oh, man, that was something else. It was so much fun to watch. And really what that team has been through, I mean, a lot of people maybe have forgotten or didn't pay attention, but they threatened not to play in the World Cup this year that was being hosted in America, or whatever the world title is, because they get such unequal treatment versus the men. It was embarrassing what USA Hockey was doing to those women. And they stood up together and said, hey, we're not going to do this. And USA Hockey had to cave and give them much better terms on how things were run. I think I post on social media, this might be our best Olympic team ever, if you consider everything that they had to go through to get to where they were.
Yeah, no, I completely agree from that perspective from hockey. And you're right. I mean, that's been an issue for years, and not just in hockey.
Sure.
Much has been made, a lot of headlines in women's soccer as well. And it's nice to see that perseverance, and it's nice to see in the rivalry, because what was great about that game was, even amidst all of that and the years of building and heartbreak and devastation, you come back and these were the two best teams. You know, it wasn't like a fluke underdog that came through and won a gold medal. These were the two best teams in a knockdown, drag-out fight. They came through, and an amazing move by an amazing athlete, Lamoureux, came through and got that goal. And that was just, again, it's a cherry on top, and I hate to say it, but it's just so weird. Like, we started the segment saying, yeah, I've got a couple hours off, I think I'll go check out curling. Same thing. I just happened to have a few hours. I was like, well, you know, the women are playing. Let's go see if we can get in. And our media pack, I mean, that's why we're way up in the stands. They put us up in the nosebleed.
Sure.
We're just kind of standing there. But, it's just unreal. It's been an amazing experience for me personally, and then also for the United States.
All right, so you're heading home in a couple of days. What in 2 years, where are the summer games at?
Tokyo, Japan.
Oh, interesting. And as far as you know, if things move along like they have, you'll be headed back?
Perhaps. I don't know. It depends a lot on, it's sort of inside baseball here, but it depends a lot on space within the NBC group.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how many people go from individual affiliates.
I imagine it depends on if there's a good local story that needs to be told as well, right? With the Winter Olympics,
and, yeah, I mean,
skiing and stuff, you got a lot.
Obviously. Right. There's a lot more that goes into it for us in Utah in the winter. However, in the summer, there's so many more viewers of Summer Olympics. The ratings are usually a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot more events, a lot more athletes, a lot more countries participating. So from that perspective, too, the Summer Olympics are usually just a touch bigger on both scale and in proximity to the United States, like the viewership. So, we'll see. I don't know. But I like it. I enjoy the work, and I enjoy covering these teams and the people. And, you know, one thing that we've talked a lot about the athletes and the games, one thing that I really like doing on our morning show there is just being able to talk to normal people, Americans who travel thousands of miles to come see these games.
Yeah.
The stories of the little guy, the athletes that don't medal, that, you know, sort of achieve their Olympic dreams, and they're here. And while they probably don't get a lot of headlines, they're every bit an Olympian. And that is certainly something that 99.999% of us would never do in a million years. I think that's what's lost on people, because the coverage on television is so great. Social media is so great. The branding, the marketing is so great. Sometimes we lose perspective on the little guys, the little countries, the little teams, the athletes who make it here that don't make headlines. It's amazing just to be here and be a part of it.
Yeah, it really is cool to watch, and it's definitely on my bucket list to get to an Olympic Games. I think it would just be so great to, for a couple of weeks, watch these athletes perform and watch some of these things that bring countries together and bring people together to cheer for their teams. It's been fun. It's been great checking in with you. I really appreciate it, Andrew. I hope we stay in touch more than just 2 years from now.
Absolutely, man. Call me anytime, bud.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great rest of your trip and a safe trip home. And I know you got some big hugs waiting for you when you get back.
For sure, man. Same to you, and appreciate everybody back there in Chicago. I was going to tell you, I actually was going to tweet you. There was a guy running around in a Jonathan Taves jersey the other day, and I almost tweeted a picture of him.
Excellent. Good.
Bring that back.
Well, with the way the Hawks have been playing, we wish they were at the Olympics this year, but hopefully they're going to get it together here before we miss the playoffs for the first time in 10 years. But Jonathan Taves,
Beijing. Maybe the NHL guys will be back, maybe, and maybe the Hawks will be back to what they're accustomed to by then.
That would be good. All right, Andrew. Safe trip home. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
See you, buddy.
All right, thanks. Andrew Wittenberg from KSL in Salt Lake City at KSL Andrew on Twitter. Really great stuff he's been putting out there from the Olympics. A lot of fun to watch. All right, we're late, but we'll take a quick break and then get the news next on 720 WGN. All right, 4:33 in the morning. Let's check some news headlines. Matt Bobala with you, 720 WGN. I'll be gone next weekend. As I said, I'll be in Los Angeles and then Vegas for some work stuff, but Jess and Roger will be here to get you through the night, along with a host to be determined. 312-981-7200 is the number. In 22 minutes, we got Max and Orion with the morning show here on 720 WGN. A couple quick things that we're just not going to get to, but notes that I had. First of all, when we started the whole talk about guns last week, it was because I put a Facebook post that said, "Fine, NRA, I give up. You win. Take the $68 million you spent on the 2016 political campaigns and put it into arming every teacher in America." And less than a week later, Donald Trump is proposing pretty much exactly that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to work out, but that's okay. We won't get into it right now because that would take forever. But he announces more North Korea sanctions, hardest sanctions ever.
Yep.
Meanwhile, all these, 13 Russians are indicted. They meddled with the election. It's now pretty much accepted as fact. He still is not pressing the sanctions that were nearly unanimously approved by both houses of Congress.
Right.
Interesting. The story that the sheriff didn't go in. Ugh.
And now there's word that there were some others in the area who did not respond.
Who didn't respond?
They did not go in.
So arrived but didn't go in?
Yeah.
How do you do that? I mean, listen.
I don't know.
Who am I to talk? I've never been in this situation. I'd love to think that in a terrible situation like that, I would be the football coach that got in front of kids. I would be somebody who had the courage to step up and try to do something.
But they were already inside the school.
Absolutely. So on the one hand, I feel bad for the police officer because God knows how we'd react, right? On the other hand, you're a trained police officer. This is your job, and this is the profession you went into, that you are there to serve and protect. And here in the instance you are needed most, you are doing neither. Now, I've read that he felt that he was doing the right thing. He called for backup. He set up a perimeter. But God, there's kids in there, and there's somebody shooting. You've got to go running in there and try to see what you can do. As an example,
here in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, the commander, who was in a meeting, heard on his radio that there was a suspect in the area, and he left the meeting and went and helped chase the guy down, and the guy killed him.
Yeah. So we'll get more into teachers and guns, I'm sure, down the road.
Yeah.
So the CPAC, this big conservative think tank, whatever was going on, Trump spoke at yesterday, right on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
He goes off script and really goes off script and gets just like feeling like he's just with his friends in the basement, it seems like, the way he's talking. But one part that was funny that I saw was he starts making fun of his own bald spot.
Yeah, he turned around for the cameras and looked at himself on the big monitor behind him, and he says, yeah, I work real hard to hide this bald spot.
So good for him for acknowledging. So there's some humanity.
Having fun with himself.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. We appreciate that. We can relate a little bit. You need more of that. One story that came out just today that I saw was that Cinemark, the movie theater chain, is banning big bags from their theaters. Can't come walking in, which I guess is mostly the ladies with a big bag. I don't know if guys tend to carry backpacks in and now they're banning them.
Kids walk around with backpacks. Now, I'm not talking about grade school kids. I'm talking high school and older. Kids, young people, walk around with backpacks. I have no clue what's in the backpacks.
It's interesting because they mentioned that Cinemark was the chain with the Aurora shooting in Colorado years ago in the theater.
Yeah.
But it's weird to me that they would ban big bags now, unless it's like, God, this is happening more often. Maybe we got to take more precaution. You would think they would have banned them back then. But now they're doing it, even though I don't quite see the correlation, because I don't think you're fitting an AR-15 or other assault rifle in a backpack. You can certainly have a handgun, but you could have a handgun anywhere on your person. So I don't know what the correlation is. And the cynic in me says they're sick of people bringing in all this damn candy, and here's our opportunity to crack down on
it. That's probably what that is.
I would think so.
Yeah.
A little bit. I would think so. So I don't know if that's a safety issue. Because
you know where they make their money is at the concession stand.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Charging me $2.50 for a Coke that costs you 4 cents.
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, just give me the medium popcorn. But for 4 cents more, you could get the one twice the size of your head with free refills. Well, I can't pass that up now, can I?
Nope.
It just doesn't make sense.
Willpower.
Goodbye. Goodbye. And I'll take a bag of goobers, too, please. Matt Bubala Show from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the historic Tribune Tower building until we move to our new digs in a few months from now. Very sad, very sad, very sad. Roger, I saw that you did not look like you were parked in the correct parking spots again tonight.
I'm in the right spot.
I don't think you are.
I never got a new updated email.
I'm telling you.
I'm against the building where we were told.
Oh, you are. I'm sorry. Maybe I saw the wrong car then. I thought that was you.
No, I'm the one with the dent in the back.
What happened? You got a new car.
I don't know.
Roger.
Don't talk to
me. By the way, just handed me a story. So you know that recreational usage of marijuana is now legal in Nevada. I'm headed there next week. Not that I'm bringing anything home. But an interesting story. Tourists catching a flight out of Sin City can now dump their leftover legal marijuana in metal containers set up at the airport. The 10 green bins, dubbed amnesty boxes, prevent federal transportation agents from finding pot on passengers during security screenings. drug is legal in Nevada, but still banned by the U.S. government. Containers were installed last week following a county ban on marijuana possession and advertising at McCarran International Airport, aiming to keep it in compliance with federal law. They're bolted to the ground, designed so marijuana prescription drugs can only be dropped in, not taken out. Amnesty boxes are offered as a way to help people comply with this ordinance, airport spokeswoman Christine Cruz said in an email. So that's interesting. I mean, yeah. I guarantee you when I go there, I'm going to see people standing next to that as you walk up to like, dude, I'll just take that for me. You don't have to drop that in there. I'll take that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I would just totally go do sure, that. Sure, I'd just stand next to him and go, oh, you know what? That's full. Let me just, we're going to transport that here. Just give me, what do you got there? What are these? Okay, let me take it. And how strong are
actually, it should be a recycling program.
It should be.
If you didn't use it before you left, you recycle it. Put it back in the store and let someone else buy
it. Let's not waste that good
stuff. Waste not, want not.
Exactly. I mean, heck, they taxed it the first time.
Yeah.
Have a scratch and dent sale. Sure. Sell it again.
Scratch and dent.
So I will try to take a picture of that when I'm out there.
That'd be cool.
We'll post that. All right. So here's something we're going to have to talk about a couple weeks from now, Jess. Jess had given me the story, and Roger, you actually brought it up earlier. These people that are dying hunting for buried treasure.
Oh, yeah.
This is a story from a website called Westword. I don't know what it is, but there are ads for erotic review on this all over it, so I don't know what exactly I've gotten into here, but they have a story about the story I need. I don't know what this is, Jess. A Freedom of Information Act request filed by Montana's KULR-TV has revealed that Jeff Murphy, who died from a 500-foot fall in Yellowstone National Park last June, had been searching for a $2 million treasure said to have been hidden by New Mexico author Forrest Fenn. As we've reported, three Coloradans died in this quest during the past 2 years, making Murphy the fourth person confirmed to have lost his life during a Fenn treasure hunt. But the ex-wife of one victim from the state believes that two additional people have also perished for what she's dubbed a hoax, bringing the total to six. Beginning in 2016, Fenn corresponded with Westword, that's the website I'm on numerous occasions regarding the first two Coloradans who died, Broomfield's Randy Bilyeu and Grand Junction pastor Paris Wallace. However, he has yet to respond to multiple inquiries about the death of Eric Ashby, who drowned in Fremont County in June 2017. His body was found the following month and finally identified earlier this year. We've reached out to Fenn. We'll let you know if he gets back to us. On his website, as we've reported, Fenn, who is in his 80s, describes his 2011 memoir, The Thrill of the Chase, as the remarkable true story of Forrest Fenn's life and of a hidden treasure secreted somewhere in the mountains north of Santa Fe. The book contains clues to the treasure's location, specifically in a poem that reads in part, "Begin it where warm waters halt, and take it in the canyon down. Not far, but too far to walk, put in below the home of Brown." Over the past 7 years, thousands of people have headed to the Rocky Mountains from Santa Fe to Montana to look for the treasure, fulfilling Fenn's goal of using lucre to tempt folks into experiencing and enjoying nature. But then in January 2016, Bilyeu disappeared after heading to New Mexico to look for Fenn's riches, and the following July, his body was positively identified. His death followed the rescue of a treasure-hunting woman from Texas who'd gotten lost 3 years before. In an email Q&A with Westword after Bilyeu's remains were ID'd, Fenn wrote, It is tragic that Randy was lost, and I am especially sorry for his two grown daughters. However, he said the incident didn't make him regret starting the treasure hunt. In his words, accidents can happen anywhere. Randy may have had a heart attack or otherwise become incapacitated. Fenn emphasized safety for treasure hunters. Anyone who goes into the mountains should be prepared. Use a GPS and always be aware of possible dangers, he noted, adding many people don't have experience hiking in the mountains, but that doesn't mean they should stay at home. Just be careful and don't get overextended. Linda Bilyeu, Randy's ex-wife, wasn't reassured by these words. In an email interview for a follow-up post, she expressed doubts that the treasure is real. Quote, "Randy lost his life searching for nothing," she wrote. Then came news that Wallace had vanished last June 14th while seeking the treasure. His car was subsequently discovered, and on June 18th, the New Mexico State Police revealed that a body had been located at Rio Grande Gorge, not far from the community of Pilar, between 5 and 7 miles from the abandoned vehicle. Shortly thereafter, New Mexico State Police Chief Pete Casadas told the Santa Fe New Mexican that he felt that the treasure hunt should be brought to a close. "I would implore that he stop this nonsense," Casita said, adding, "I think he has an obligation to retrieve his treasure if it does exist." Casita's words had an impact on Fenn, who told Westward, "I have to respect what the chief said," and admitted that he was contemplating whether the time had come to call off the search. During a subsequent email interview, however, Fenn explained that he'd reached the opposite conclusion. "The chief's call, quote, caused me to stop and think for a few days," he revealed. But he also noted that of 600 emails he received after Wallace disappeared, only 8 unsigned messages urged that the treasure hunt end. As a result, quote, "after a long deliberation and discussions with friends, I've decided that stopping the search would not be fair to the thousands who have searched the Rockies and gone home with wonderful memories that will last them forever. A number of family members who have been estranged for years have reunited to join in the search." Fenn stayed mum after reports about Ashby's death surfaced, and thus far he hasn't commented publicly on the latest tragedy to make headlines. But the documents obtained by KULR-TV about Murphy, whose body was found on June 9th, 2017, show that he'd emailed Fenn in the days before he went missing at Yellowstone. Moreover, after Murphy vanished, Fenn is said to have reached out to park officials and offered to help fund a helicopter to look for him. As for Linda Bilyeu, who penned an extraordinary open letter to Fenn in 2016, she has plenty to say. She points to a speculation that 42-year-old Mike Peterson, who died at Yellowstone the same month as Murphy, was also seeking Fenn's treasure. Linda adds that in her opinion, there's actually a sixth person to have died looking for the treasure, too. According to her, the parents of the victim, who died after Randy but before Paris Wallace, reached out to her personally but haven't gone public. In correspondence with Westworld via Facebook Messenger, Linda writes, "It continues to baffle my brain how this treasure hunt continues as if no deaths have occurred due to it." She maintains the death count is now up to 6. 6 men have lost their lives searching for a treasure that could or very possibly could not even exist. 6 families are left to mourn their loved ones, yet Forrest Fenn does nothing but continue to write his memoirs. "The man is callous and ruthless. Only he could end this madness. Yet he chooses not to. He chooses to enjoy the attention through the darkness he has cast into the lives of so many." Fenn feels very differently about the search, as he makes clear in the following excerpt from a Q&A published in June 2017. The month Murphy and Peterson died. Fenn says, "It's important to have someone with you anytime you go into the mountains. Family or friends at home should know your plan in detail, and you should stick to the plan. Proper clothing, a cell phone, GPS, food and water are necessities." They said to him, "A lot of people have interpreted your poem as suggesting that the treasure is located near or perhaps in water. Can you say whether these folks are on the right track? If so, do you think that in retrospect, these clues may encourage people to take unwise risks?" He says, "People read all sorts of things into the clues. Regardless of where you think the treasure is, you should not exceed your physical and mental capabilities. The treasure is not in a dangerous place. They should remember that I was about 80 when I did it." You've also pointed out that the hiding place is accessible to someone your age. Does that mean discovering and accessing the location wouldn't be dangerous for the average person? He says, "If someone thinks the treasure is hidden in a dangerous location, they should not search for it. There's no percentage in taking risks." Along those lines, would you also say that there's no need to go into treacherous areas to look for the treasure because that description doesn't apply to where you hid it? He said yes. What do you think, Roger? Would you go searching for treasure? $2 million in treasure?
No.
No?
No.
How come?
Well, first of all, it's in an area, apparently, if these guys are going where they think it is, it's in a dangerous area.
He said an 80-year-old man hid it. It's not.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Do you believe that there is actually a $2 billion treasure hidden?
No, I don't believe it.
Do you think he's making that all up?
No. Yeah, I think he is.
Now, that's callous. That's bad.
Yeah.
If people are dying and it's not even really out there.
No, I don't think it's there.
I think it is.
First of all, one, it's stupid.
Why?
What? Why are you hiding money out in the middle of nowhere?
Sounds like he wanted to get people to get more in touch with nature.
Oh, you know what? Buy walking sticks for people and
buy walking hike sticks for people?
Walking sticks and hiking shoes.
The way to get Americans to do things, Roger, is not by buying them walking sticks. It's by saying, "Hey, there's $2 million out in the forest. Go look." And then we all go, "All right," and we go outside, and suddenly we're in nature.
All right, so compare the number of people who allegedly have tried to look for this thing compared to the number of people in the United States who are sitting at home going, "Are you nuts? This is fake. I'm not going out." It's phony.
It's real. It's real,
phony.
Roger.
You know. Stop that.
No, I don't know. If the guy's rich and he has money, why not do something like that?
No. What does he give it to the... No, he's... No. No.
All right, Jess, we're in a couple of weeks. We need to talk to somebody about this, either somebody who searched or let's get the book. I don't think the guy's going to do interviews, but if you can reach out to him.
Hey, let's do a live broadcast from out there.
From the Santa Fe Mountains?
Yeah, why not?
Then you're going to have to look.
Oh, all right, I'll look, but y'all going with me.
Well, no, that's fine. I think it would be a fun little, like, adventure.
All right.
I mean, he says it's not a dangerous place.
People are dying, but okay.
It would be interesting. Yeah. I think it would be interesting.
Yeah, we could take a we could have Steve Bertrand book a travel. Get a bunch of people to go out.
That's a hard one to sell. Go on an adventure of a lifetime where four people have recently died. But we'll be more careful.
We got to work on your advertising techniques.
Well, so maybe it goes with the whole Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Search for treasure, maybe die, or just have a Diet Coke, whatever. Do what you want to do.
I love how you bring the show full circle.
And right back to the beginning.
Thank you.